As humans, we often have dreams and aspirations that may not come to fruition in the time and manner we desire. However, our woman trailblazer Chavi Behel believes that there is a higher power that will ensure that our dreams come true at the right moment. Our responsibility then is to maintain a positive attitude, manifest our desires, and exercise patience as we wait for them to materialize. Women are at the top of the creation. Let's stay there.
Hi, Chavi. And welcome to this series of conversations where, as you know, we basically talk to women achievers who we call women trailblazers. We want them to come and share the stories of their lives with us, tell us about their challenges, struggles, ups and downs, achievements, so that other women who are either listening to them or reading about them also get inspired to get out of whatever is holding them back and realize their potential. And eventually, we want to build a community of women who are there to support and empower each other, be with each other, grow with each other. So without further ado, thank you so much for being with us and let's get started. Yeah,
thank you so much for having me on this call, this meeting, and I'm really excited.
Thank you. Okay, so let's start with a little icebreaker. Tell us something about your early life and childhood.
Okay, so I would say it was a very happy childhood because I didn't have parental pressures. Mm-hmm. I was brought up in a joint family with lots of aunts and uncles and always an activity or a celebration or something the other happening all the time. As a result, my parents were very busy managing the household and the family. So I sort of did what I wanted to do. I was out most of the time. I played a lot. I was a tomboy because I was born into a family which had lots of boys and no girls. So whether it was jumping terraces or plucking mangoes, I was great at it, even climbing the trees. So in a nutshell, yeah, I think I was very adventurous and had a good, happy childhood with no, you know, what should I say? It didn't have any kind of breakages or too much of thought or what should I do? What should I not do? I was a very impulsive kid and I just did what my mind told me to do. And I was happy about it, and touch wood, I would say safely enough, I got along with whatever I got. So that is what it was. It wasn't very, I wouldn't say it was something which was, you know, a lot of action in my early life. No, not really. I would say it was a peaceful, happy life, but I just did what I wanted to do. And I had the freedom to do that.
So basically a free spirit, and you continue to be so.
Yes, I would like to think that.
All right. Okay. So then how did you kind of get into teaching? Was that your first career choice or how did it all start?
So ambition, yes. Always very, very ambitious. And born into a family, Sangeeta, where I'm a Mathur by birth. And typically, Mathur girls are taught the nuances of culture, which was a lot of music, a lot of behavioral etiquettes and education. Yes, very, very important. My father was very particular about the fact that I should study and be focused on education. And he was pretty okay about the fact that if I did not know how to cook, it's school. But I should have the other faculties, like I should be able to be good to people, be well-mannered, well-behaved, turned out well. He was very particular about that. And have an interest in the culture of India, that is music, dance, appreciate art, that kind of a thing. So ambition was always very deeply seated in the sense that I just wanted to make an impact, whichever way. So teaching, I don't know where and how, but yes, as a child also, we had these, you know, we were a group of friends and we would study together. Okay. And I realized that I could teach, but okay, it never hit me ever in my head that I wanted to be a teacher. So come undergrad, postgrad, and then I felt I would want to do civils. That was my passion, that I would want to take up civil services. So I did try civil services, and that also was not a conscious effort. It was more to do with the fact that a friend of mine, a very close friend of mine, and she used to stay in Asian Village and we used to stay in Panchil, she wanted to appear.
Okay.
And she said, so be my buddy. Uh-huh. Let's study together. So it started like that with no formal thought. I just got along and got interested and started sitting for those sessions and learning and everything. And then finally, I just took the exam. Mm-hmm. My only hint was that I wanted an IFS because by that time I had started reading. Okay. And we both cleared and we both got Indian Economic Service.
Mm. Okay, excellent.
So it was at that point in time with IES on one side. There was another turmoil in my life at that time. In fact, that was the only time in my life, I think, I had to make a choice. And that was that I was in a relationship with a young man. And we thought that if we want to make this happen, we should get married. And that was also a thought that my parents felt that, you know, if you do it now, you do it now. He, being a banker, was very sure that he would be moving spaces and he would be moving around the country, maybe out of the country. So it was a conscious decision at that time that I made, where I said, okay, this relationship and this commitment is more valuable to me. Mm-hmm. And career will happen and it will fall into place. And that's where the pivot happened. And I moved out of that into teaching. Okay. Into teaching in the sense that we got married and I had just completed my postgrad from Delhi School of Economics. That time there was no NEET at Delhi University. There were no entrance examinations of that nature. So the only way to do it was ad hoc. You applied and wherever you got, you started working. So I did a couple of stints at LSR, at JNC. Then we moved to Mumbai.
Okay.
And in Mumbai, we were there for nearly 1.5 years, but I was in my family way, did not pursue anything. So just read, enjoyed, and hogged.
Okay.
And I had my daughter then. And when I had my daughter, I again made a decision because these decisions were again not binding on me. Nobody told me to take it that way. But I just felt that I had brought a new life into the world and I wanted to enjoy that new life. So I would, I used to take up assignments sometimes, which used to require me to, could be a school assignment, could be teaching at a university level, but I did it at my own pace. Okay. Only if I felt the need to do it, because I felt that my kid needed me a lot.
Yeah.
And then again, we did move to Pune. And so there was no regularity in the sense that I could not pick up a full-time job because I was always wondering whether, you know, now we are going to move out or are we not going to move out? Because my husband was in his early career days and we did not want to leave any opportunity. So that was that. And then I had my son. And again, at that point in time, I felt that, okay, now with the two of them, I might as well handle, you know, all the domestic affairs. And I had sort of put my ambition on the back burner. I wouldn't say that it was I felt bad about it. I would say I just didn't think about it. I just thought this was priority. And that is the way life continued. Because of the kind of work that my husband used to be involved in, there were times where, you know, he had to be away from the family, out of the country. He's the only child. So I just somehow felt that I was responsible. Mm-hmm. And hence, I just let it lie low, whatever thoughts and things were in my head. I would do whatever I could in time that I got, but I was really not very, very, very focused on going out there and doing a 24/7 kind of a job.
Okay.
And then when Arvind, my son, started going to school, That is the time when I really, really thought, okay, I can get out and I would like to get out. So I remember I was very keen that he should join Shriram.
Okay.
And we applied and I met the director, the principals, everybody. And everybody told me that, you know, why do you want to teach in a school? And, you know, right now there is no opportunity maybe at senior classes. I said, no, but I'm happy. I can teach anybody. You give me any kid, I will teach. But I want to get in. And I would like this journey to be with my children.
Okay.
So luckily, my kids got admission and I got admitted into Shriram. And that, I think, was... I think it was divine intervention because it happened so beautifully. And I still have very, very fond memories of people I have worked with, learnings that I've had. I think my entire life changed into such an enriching experience that I'm only grateful. There is only gratitude for what has happened.
Okay.
So that is how my journey with Shriram Schools began.
Okay. So in the course of this, so you have spoken about how, of course, you let your personal life or your family take precedence over your ambitions. So I guess in that sense, when we look at your working life, yes, that was a kind of a challenge, but then you worked around it and kept in touch with the entire, you know, the idea of working by taking on assignments or whatever. So other than that, when you began your career, any particular challenges that come to your mind, any struggle that you had to face?
So Sangeeta, like you would know, you are a working woman and most of us are multitaskers.
Yeah.
And if I'm a Virgo, and I don't know whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, but one tends to be a perfectionist.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
things don't fall into place. My only challenge always used to be that if I have decided that this is the order of my day, and if it is not going that way, then it... At initial stages, it would leave me very distraught. It would not come out in any way in the sense that I would be able to control it, but I was just not happy. And that used to become visible because, you know, everybody used to think, oh, she's taking a lot of pressure. There is school pressure. There's kids. There's family. There was no pressure, but it was self-inflicted, what should I say, torture. Because I would always want that, you know, okay, 7 o'clock, I've done this. 3 o'clock, I come back. 5 o'clock, my children need to go here. 8 o'clock, this would happen. So there was a lot of clockwork, and that was the kind of person I was. So that was one challenge, which I really had to work on myself for. The other challenge was that I initially was, I would say, helicopter mom.
Okay.
It was really bad. Now that I look at it, I think I was somebody who would, you know, I would think that, all right, if my daughter is 8, so what? Let me read Shakespeare to her. How can she not have the best language, the best mathematical skills? My expectation was not about what she would imbibe. I just felt I must give her everything. Both the kids must receive from all quarters, whether it was, you know, the environment, whether it was behavior, whether it was academics, it should be holistic. And I had joined the Shriram School where I was so, I think I was all encompassed by the beauty of the ethos of that institution, that I had become a mini Shriram in myself. So I was looking at holistic, everything. And life is not perfect. And, you know, you have to learn to appreciate what you have. So at certain moments, I used to feel, have I done something wrong? Is it wrong that my children do this? Is it wrong that there is no synergy? Should there be synergy? So these were the kind of challenges, mental challenges, more than any physical challenges. Touch wood, I've been very fortunate to have had a comfortable life and not face any other upheavals. So these were self-created upheavals because of the kind of thought process that I carried. So these were the challenges that, you know, how do I manage everything perfectly? Should it, you know, In the whole process, I realized that for I think 10 to 12 years of my life, I did not give time to myself. There was no me time. That was the call out, which I today look at it and think of that as a challenge. That was a very big challenge in my personality, in my thought process. So those were the typical challenges.
And anything because you're a woman, anything you felt that it is only happening to me because I'm a woman and it won't happen to a man?
No, luckily, I think I've been very fortunate in that scene, because I was married into a family which gave me more importance than my husband. And so I was always put up on a higher pedestal. I never felt that this is happening to me because I'm a woman. It always struck me that this is happening to me because I need to be better. It was a competition with myself.
Self-inflicted. But the world also, there was nothing that you faced because of, because maybe the kind of profession that you chose.
Exactly.
I don't think.
Exactly.
You would face too many.
We are highly women dominated. And which is good and bad. Because I think as women, we have the power to understand emotion beautifully.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we have also the power to rebuke that emotion very disastrously.
Okay.
So yes, it's great to be in an all-women environment at times. But that was one thing which I realized over a period of time, that women can be great, great friends, but all of them are not honest.
Okay.
And that could happen even with the other gender. But I just feel that with the other gender, sometimes I think, or I don't know if it's about a gender or it's about a personality, but it's more open.
Okay.
Whereas here, I find that you can be very open and you can be very honest. And we as women have the power to, like I said, absorb a lot of stuff from all quarters. But we also have the potential to manipulate that thought and put it across in maybe a convoluted way. That was one thing that I felt as a gender. I did not feel not empowered because I was a woman, because I chose a career which did not have the opposite sex to that extent. But amongst women, I do feel that, yes, there is this little concern at times.
Okay. That's true, actually. Yes. Okay. So, yes, like you spoke about the fact that you have so many roles to play, like most women. So any particular way that you balanced or balance your life?
Now?
Always. Now and earlier, whenever.
Like I said, I learned. I learned to handle. Initially, yes, with the different kinds of roles, it was always overwhelming. And I would succumb under pressure at times. And I would not say that it would lead to something very distasteful in a relationship or anything of that nature. I would just say that I just felt to be wanted more, I think, to be appreciated more in basic terms. I now feel that I wanted to be appreciated far more at earlier times than I thought I was.
Okay.
So that was one thing. How I have managed to overcome that is because I think today I'm very much at peace with the being that I am. And I'm very happy the way I am. I'm very confident the way I am, because I feel this is the best version of myself so far, and I'm only going to progress. So I think it is about your own self. It is about challenging your being and trying to be the best possible version of yourself. So you have to idealize. I've also realized that there is a lot of power in a woman. I don't think men have it, very honestly.
Okay.
Because I feel they are very construed in their thought process, in the sense either they see a white or they see a black, and that's the end of the matter. And that's it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So while they do great stuff, but I think the woman has, because of the flexibility of her emotion, the, you know, the genre of emotions that she can go through and handle could be anger, could be love, could be affection, could be peace, could be smiles, could be, you know, understanding the sorrow of a of another woman. So because of that diversity that she has, a woman, I find, can manifest. And that is the power that I have started feeling and started reaching out to. Because I feel that, okay, today I feel I can do this, maybe 10 days, maybe 15, maybe at the end of the month, but I will do it. So that is where I think I've been able to find a balance. I've been able to give myself that time. And honestly speaking, it was only after I started giving time to myself that what am I? Who am I? I am not just the mother, the wife, or a colleague at work. I am an individual. What are my thoughts? So probably, Sangeeta, to me, it came in very late in my life that, you know, post 40, I started thinking about all these things that who am I?
Better late than never. That's okay.
So till that time, I was just probably just going around in the buzz and doing things and experiencing every moment. But yeah, when it came to me, then I started consciously delving deeper to figure out that where am I headed? What is it that I really want? And I realized I really want to be happy.
So and you think that the different roles that a woman plays, the basic foundation of that is that you should be happy and comfortable yourself before you can start donning those various hats and maybe not pleasing everyone, but at least, you know, doing your duty or your responsibilities.
Yeah, I think you need to know yourself before you are able to, you know, take on anything. And I think that is, as an individual, it has nothing to do with a gender. But I think there is a very powerful word which is called no, which we don't and we can't use. Most of the time, maybe it is societal pressures, maybe it is family issues, but that's a very strong word. And everybody has the right to use it. So I think the power of no really makes you delve a little deeper and say, okay, 10 minutes to myself. This is me. I am not interested in anything else. Has really helped me discover what I want. And I could be happy just by myself. I don't need, I've realized that. That is what I want. So like, to answer your question, whether it is whether a woman wants to be happy at the end of the day or what is the ultimate goal, I don't think it is gender specific, but I definitely think that if I'm happy, I do much better.
Yes, that's true.
Whatever I do, I will put my heart and soul into it because there is a lot of energy. There's a lot of positivity. When I'm, and that happiness for me has actually started coming in only because of the time I'm able to spend with myself.
Yeah, right. So if you look back at your life, what do you think has been your biggest success so far?
It's not over. It's still to come.
No, till now. But if you, till now, what do you think?
Okay, I think my biggest success was my journey at the Shriram School, Aravali, where I was the vice principal for 10 years. And the success in that is more to do with students. The connect I built over the years, the relationship that I have learned to develop, learned to nurture, the success stories of so many students, I think I call that success. When I get a call from an old student who says that, you know, this is what I've done, that I think is the eureka moment in my life. And I feel, okay, that is my success. That is my success in the sense that there is a child who has been able to reach out there and still remember me. So that I think is the biggest success story so far.
I kind of agree because I think for every teacher, that's the biggest high when your students remember you. after many, many years as well.
True. Okay. It of course, you know, if you look at the growth prospects to get on to a vice principalship was a big thing. And I felt extremely honored to get that kind of role, to handle situations, to be part of the senior management team of such a prestigious institute. That all is there. But the biggest high is that student body and that connect you have with your children.
Okay, so now life goes on, and yes, you're working and you have like hundreds of responsibilities, but there are days when you are, you know, like kind of down and out. I mean, every day is not the same. You're not like kind of charging to, you know, hit whatever your target or goal every day. So what do you do to motivate yourself the days when you are down and out?
I love to listen to music and give myself 20 minutes.
Okay.
And I'm being very, very factual here. I don't increase it beyond 20 minutes because I don't want it to be a habit. Okay. So I have a little corner, which is my me corner. And if people don't find me anywhere in the house, they do not look around because they think that I'm somewhere in that me corner. That is my time. I feel, okay, why is this happening to me? So it is a 20 minute conversation with myself, something which I have developed over the years, which I think helps me because I question myself, okay, so, and I talk to myself like in first person that, Javi, you are not happy. What is wrong with you? Why are you doing this? And then I try to go back as to when did it start? Did it start? Did somebody say something to you? Were you feeling bad about it? Or is just that you're bugged that things are not working out and you feel that you are a wow person and, you know, this should have happened. So why has it not happened? So I question myself for 15 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes, which helps me to get on to the case as to why. And then suddenly I realize, really, I'm sad about this. But this will change. And 20, 25 minutes, it takes me to come out of it. But 20 minutes of very solid conversation with myself. Sometimes I even, I don't know whether it might sound stupid, but I pen it down.
That's wonderful. That's actually...
I write to myself and I have made it a habit that I will not go to sleep feeling bad. So I want to go to sleep feeling happy. That tomorrow is another day. I need to be grateful for the day today. And tomorrow, if it didn't happen today, it'll happen tomorrow. And that tomorrow will come.
Will come.
So, you know, I think that has really, really helped me. Initially, yes, I used to write a lot. Because I used to talk to myself and write. And that writing helped me to, I think it's scientific. Because what you write, you imbibe it deeper.
Yes, yes.
And it's out of my system. Mm. And then it's over. It's gone.
Yeah. You're able to deal with it better, I think, because you're able to put your thoughts down and know exactly what is bothering you. Their thoughts are not jumbled up in your head. They're right there in front of you. So that actually is a very good way. Yeah, excellent.
Absolutely. I think, I don't know whether, you know, how much would it help different people, but it is something that has really helped me. And I feel it's good to get your thoughts aligned.
Absolutely.
Because the problem is nobody else. The problem is me. Because I'm the one who's suffering. I can go talk about it to 30 people. People will not understand.
Yeah.
They don't.
You're going through it.
I am going through it. And then I'll only feel worse. Because I feel, oh, they don't even know that what I'm going through. Because they can't know what I'm going through.
Yeah.
So ups and downs, yes, Sangeeta. Lots on a daily basis also. But I think this practice helps me.
Great. Okay, so 10 years from now, where shall you be?
I want to be a CEO of my firm, which would have a lot of international clout and a lot of international branding. And it would be one of the niche things in the education industry. I don't know where it is going to pivot. And I'm just saying it today. You've asked me and I've just said
it. Manifest it. It will happen. Want it. Yes. So that's really great. Okay. So tell me, in this lifetime so far, some of the learnings that you've had, or maybe some of the lessons which life has taught you, if you would like to share some of those with us.
Sure. First and foremost, patience. It is something which I have learned now. I've learned everything after 48, 45, I think. Till that time, I was just sort of soaking it all in. But yeah, it's very, very important, because I feel solutions come, answers come, but you need to be patient.
Nothing
happens as of yesterday. Everything will happen as of day after tomorrow.
Yes, you're right.
Patience, very important. Secondly, be a good listener. That was a habit that I formed myself to become, because I was somebody who would just be in a rat race, in the sense, anywhere, everywhere, I would be speaking. I would go and just speak, because I knew I could just, my thought is coming, I can't hold it, I need to.
I need to speak here and now.
One thing I learned was, be a very good listener, because when you are a good listener, A, you get a lot of respect. Because people start valuing you. You know, if you, if somebody is speaking and you're looking at that person suddenly, the speaker starts looking at you, because they feel, oh, there is one respectful audience. So that boosts the morale of the person who's speaking. So that is one, if you're a good listener. Secondly, I was always able to challenge and question authority, or question what I did not feel right after I became a good listener, because points were very clear in my head.
So then you don't react, you respond.
Absolutely. You just nailed it. You respond and you don't react. That is absolutely, I think, the mantra. Because when you are waiting to respond, half the problem gets resolved there itself. You know, you have sort of discussed the pros and cons in your head, and I think you're able to make more sensible decisions.
And when you, so it is like half the problem is solved at your end, and also you don't create another problem by reacting in maybe not the right way.
So two more things which I would, my learnings in life have been, third one being gratitude. I think every day, you know, what they say in Hindi, Punjabi, Shukrana, just be grateful. It is so important. Gratitude. I think your strength comes from gratitude. Get up in the morning and you say, wow, you know, I'm still here. There's still a lot to do. So you, and you want to make the most of that day. I think a lot of strength comes from gratitude. And though I've put it in the last, but I think it should be, I think most important in life, your happiness. Find that calling. Be happy. Everything, I've realized, everything will fall around you if you are happy. Because if you are happy and you are grateful and you're conscious about what you speak, and you're waiting in patience, I think life is pretty cool.
So tell me, in this world that in which we live today, of course, things are changing for women. I mean, of course, they're much better than what it used to be earlier. But even now, how do you think people react to a woman who is successful in, like, in every sense of the word? And I'm here not only talking about professional success, but as a person. So whether it's your family, or it is your friends, or it is people who you just meet at a social gathering, how do people react to women who've made it for themselves?
So I think, here, I would say that though we do talk a lot about progression, and we talk about a very progressive society, and 90% of the time, probably we are. But 10% of the time, I don't know if it is success, but a woman is always reminded of her time for her various multiple duties that she must. So maybe nobody's cutting you down by saying that, you know, oh, great that you are successful, or it's not such a great thing that you're successful. But when you are saying that you are very successful or congratulations on doing this so well, how do you manage your house? Do you get to give time to your children? Yeah. So your husband supports you in this initiative. Why should my husband support me in my initiative? It is my initiative. I don't need my husband's support to say a yes or a no. That, I feel, is something that we have to still overcome. To the extent that a member of the opposite sex or other members in your family need to look at you as an individual who has dreams, ambitions, and will either go up, fall out, whatever happens, it's going to happen just like it'll happen to anybody else.
True.
So why question? Why that question that, I think now is the time where at least this generation of women should say, I am doing what I'm doing as an individual, not because I am a woman. So I do not need the support and a buy-in of everybody else. If I need the buy-in of everybody else, then if you are the other member or the other partner, you also need my buy-in to do what you do.
Correct.
So it has to be, I think today, what is most important is that it has to be a collaboration.
Yeah.
It has to be together. It has to be accepting. I should also accept. And the other members of the family should also accept. It should not be that, oh, you're doing such a great job. Wow. But khana ban gaya tha. Were you able to feed your husband? Why? You know, even so, those kind of questions I still feel people are asked. Maybe not khana ban gaya tha, but definitely
something,
you know,
related to that.
Related to, because it is still thought that the prime responsibility of a woman is being a caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy. I think I'm very proud of the fact that I'm a caregiver. I would say, wow, I'm a caregiver. But caregiver is there. Caregiver is not here. So do not question me on caregiving. That is, maybe it's an inert nature. It's my nurturing skills that I've been born with certain things that I can do it. So it is a high point. It is not a questionable task. You can't question that part of me, which I am.
I think I'm very proud to accept that I can do that and I can do this. I can do both of them. You don't have to, I mean, you cannot question me and you cannot doubt me, or you cannot say that, okay, you're flying so high in your, you know, professional world, but okay, just come back and tell me, did you do this as well? So I think that should stop.
Yeah, true. And like you're saying, Sangeeta, I have heard in the sense that, you know, this is all, I'm not being judgmental about anybody, but yeah, I do hear that the moment there is a success story of a woman, and this is the power of the other woman who is constantly questioning that, you know, how did she manage it up there?
Yeah.
There could not be a straight path. So that's what I'm saying, that as women, we can be the best of friends. We can be our own worst enemies. So we need to stop being together. Like you said, that you aim to create a platform which empowers women. Then I don't care about any other gender. I think the woman should respect and love the woman.
Yes.
More than anybody.
And that's why I think it's important for women who have not been able to, like, say, break the shackles or the traditions or get out of that mold to do something. I think when they do these kind of things, it's because there is that inherent some ambition, some dream, which they have, you know, kind of suppressed. It hasn't been come out. So when they see somebody else doing it, they kind of say, okay, she did that, but I'm doing this. So I think somewhere. So maybe when we allow women, or not allow is maybe not the right word, when we give them that opportunity to come out, then maybe, you know, these comparisons will kind of diminish and will no longer happen. All right. So Chavi, I think you're the best person for me to ask this question. Like, as you see around yourself, and you don't have to see around, you can see within yourself, that after having put in, say, X number of years in a particular career, you decide to shift gears and do something different. Now here, of course, you are continuing to be in the field of education, but of course you do see that a lot of people start doing things which are you know, totally different in the sense like somebody gives up banking to become a writer or somebody does, you know, something else to start singing. So why is this happening nowadays? It was unheard of earlier.
I think people are recognizing their inner talents, their inner nature, which they did not earlier. In the sense that earlier, I think you started with something and you felt that that is it. It wasn't that, I would not say that people never thought and did not have dreams and did not have passions, which they would have wanted to change gears. But they just felt that, okay, this is smooth, this is happening, let's continue with that. Today's individual is far more vocal and is willing to take the plunge because being that passion, holding that passion true to yourself becomes very important to you. So today you can voice it and you can say, okay, that's it. I'm not going to continue to do this. Not because it is good or bad or anything like that. It is just that my being is asking for more. A, I'm able to recognize that asking. B, I'm willing to experiment.
Yeah, yeah. So that risk-taking ability is also there. So, but where does that come from? The fact
I
that...
It comes from your power to question and the ability. Somewhere if you see, there are things which are changing, which are evolving in the whole world. One thing being that you're reading about people. So that, again, inspirations are visible.
Yes.
You
yes,
see
yes.
people taking a plunge at different ages and then you feel, why not me?
Yeah.
Earlier, whether it was social media, whether it was information, it was not so readily available. So you were fairly cocooned in your own zone. And so you continued because ABC continued. So I will also continue kind of a thing because this is the best thing that has happened to me. Today, I think you see the world. It's become a closer world. You are globally connected to anybody and everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Inspiration somewhere has made an impact on every individual. I think that is what has started making people think that, where am I? What is it that I really want? Am I happy? You're questioning.
Yes.
You never question.
Yeah, that's a great point. Okay. So you've taught boys and girls who are, say, so to say, on the threshold of their lives in terms of, you know, their careers and their personal lives. So what would you like to advise them, and anything that you would like to tell them before they take that plunge? I mean, personally or professionally, any piece of advice that you would like to give?
So I'm not a misogynist. I'm not somebody who believes that, I wouldn't like to call it a plunge. I would, like I said, want to call anything that any individual does, be a girl or a boy, if it is a relationship, whether it is with your work, whether it is with a person, whether it is with your life, be aware of what you're doing.
Okay.
Don't be blinded. Be rational. Don't think, ever demean your personality by saying that, you know, I have fallen. So one thing which I have never been able to understand, and I still am very, very strong on that, is, for example, you never fall in love. You rise in love.
Yeah.
So you cannot. So I always feel to the young girls and boys, don't fall in love. Rise in love. Look for a collaboration. Look for a relationship which will enhance your being. Because that's what it is all about. It's about partnership. It is about creating a much more beautiful life than what you currently have. And that is why you're looking for a union. Whether it is with your work, whether it is with your passion, or whether it is with an individual. So my advice always to youngsters is that don't jump into anything. Don't be in a rush. Think. Logic. Rationality, emotion. That's the order. Emotion should be the last.
Okay.
Because if you have rationalized it, then you have thought of the right emotion.
Okay. But anything for girls that you would like to say?
I would like to tell the girl to every girl that I meet, I just feel like saying that, you know, the world is yours. There is no gender bias. Don't create that gender bias in yourself, but never hold your passion. And never be, never feel defeated. You have the power that no other gender has. I feel a woman, a girl, is way above. Because you have the power to handle so many multitudes of facets that you can possess. You can smile, you can hold, you can nurture, you can, that's your innate ability. God has built you with that. You can hold a child. Who can do that?
Yeah.
What else? You know, it's, I feel a woman is on top of the creation. Nothing happened without a woman.
Yes, so, for sure.
So every girl there needs to know that she has the potential to change the world. Change the world does not mean ki you have to go fighting around. I feel you need to be impactful. You need to be. And also one more thing. I feel women have the power to manipulate, positive and negative. Use the positive power to manipulate. You have it, use it. Use it to your advantage. Use it in a good way, not in a negative way. But that power, that flexibility, that domain, the male species does not have.
Yes, that is there. That is there.
So use what you have. You are the most powerful. And be proud of it. Be proud of your physical appearance, your mental faculties, whatever you do. Just be proud of it.
True. I agree. So then, finally, can a woman have it all?
Absolutely. A woman, it is only a woman who can have it all.
Okay. Yes. Would you like to elaborate?
Oh, like I said, you know, some of it comes from our heritage, our culture. I very strongly believe in that. From the Indian-ness or whatever you read, maybe spirituality to some extent. But yeah, I feel you are, a woman is a gifted being. Every day you can discover a new facet of yourself because there is so much that you can possess. Because a woman has the biggest power, which means that she can absorb. To absorb and nurture something, which she does as an individual. She absorbs a being and nurtures a being. What bigger thing can any being on this planet do? So I definitely think a woman has it all, totally.
All right. So thank you very much. This is it. And I think it was an extremely enlightening and very interesting session. And I hope you enjoyed yourself.
I thoroughly enjoyed myself. And thank you for having me here. And just that these are just personally my thoughts. No binding or judgment to anything good, bad, ugly. This is completely
what I
think.
These are your thoughts.
Yeah. And I loved being here and speaking my mind.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. If you liked it, do rate it and follow us on Spotify. And stay tuned for some more inspiring stories of women trailblazers.